Accession number 29243, reel number 4.
Yes, that's working okay. So if we could start sort of how old you were when the war started.
Yes. Yes, I was 23 in February 1940, registered for military service, and I preferred the RAF because my brother was a serving officer. He had been in the Air Force since about 1928, and thought I'd perhaps get to join him sometime, but it wasn't to be, and so eventually I received joining instructions on the 16th of May to go to Dover, the 5th Field Training Regiment, in Connaught Barracks, right on top of the cliffs. There was a long climb up to join.
That was 1940?
That was in, yes, May 1940.
Right, but you were living in Shoreham at that time?
Yes, I was, and yes.
Baker Sharp?
No, I was living in Crown Road
in
at
Crown
that time,
Road.
Yes.
Right, okay.
And I was actually in the Auxiliary Fire Service, and when I said I was in the fire service, I said, well, I mean, this takes precedence over that. You're in the army now. And anyway, the first week was spent in getting measured up for battle dress and all the health checks, eyes and teeth and everything, marching about Dover. And there were one or two air raids on the place, and the strange thing was we were usually taken up to the second story to thought it was safer because the bomb going down would explode at the bottom and we were safer up top. But anyway, when there was time, we were marched into the castle grounds and went underground there until the raid was over. And so this was the first week. We were allowed out to Dover town, so we used to go down, but of course with the heavy boots we were issued with, it was a very steep hill, and we used to have great difficulty in going up and down the hill. But anyway, we enjoyed going into Dover now and again. The next week we commenced training, and so we had rifle drill, marching drill, gun drill, and there was driving instructions for some. And this went on for a week, and they began to whip us into shape, and we were fed very well, but there was quite a crowd of us.
Can I ask, was there any, were you given any choice about what you would wanted to do in the army, or were you just said, well, you're posted here, you're going to be this?
Yes, they posted us, but the only thing that they did, they gave us a test which decided whether we were going to be gunners or drivers, and I think they decided that I was going to be a driver.
Right.
For the answers I gave to their questionnaire. But anyway, we had this week, and then...
Can I just interrupt
you
again? When you said you wanted to join the RAF, did they say why they wouldn't be taking you into the RAF?
No.
You in the army?
No, they didn't, no.
Because Jim Ashby had the same experience.
Oh, did he?
He wanted to join the RAF, but they said it was all full.
Well, they did say, yes, they did say that they were looking for engineers at the time,
yes.
But I certainly was no engineer,
no,
and so
okay.
I didn't qualify. So anyway, I was quite, I'd say happy, but I was quite satisfied to go into the artillery.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was rather looking forward to it in a peculiar way.
Yeah.
But anyway... there was a muster parade, and everybody was called out onto the parade ground, and they said that some serious things were happening, and they asked for volunteers to be called out in the night. And they didn't say why or where or anything. They said, "Would you be prepared as volunteers to be get up and go out in the night?" And all very mystifying. And anyway, they called out some in the night. I didn't go, but they did call out. And quite soon, we also had to join them. And what was happening was, of course, Dunkirk was beginning. And ships were coming in, and boats, all sorts of things, coming into Dover Harbour. So for the next 3 or 4 days, it was absolutely chaos, really, because we were going down to the harbour, and we were finding ourselves going onto boats and stretcher bearing, carrying people off, and we had to carry them to the railway station, and which seemed about half a mile, but I don't know how far it was. But by the time we got there, of course, we were getting blisters on our hands. We were carrying heavy, heavy stretchers, and of course the ships, some of them, were just as they'd been strapped as they came across the channel. So it was an introduction into war for all us green rookies, because we'd just come straight in. We'd only been there a couple of weeks and experiencing all this, you know, as they came from Dunkirk. And eventually they got it into order, and so we were going on 8 hours and coming back for eight hours. So every time we came back, we weren't sure whether we were going for breakfast or dinner or what it was. So this went on for quite a while, probably a couple of weeks, until eventually no more came in today, because they were coming from odd places as well as from Dunkirk. And so that put paid to our training, really. So we were untrained. Then, of course, the panic was for getting regiments re-equipped and the men they'd lost. And so they said, look at the notice board, and it will tell you where you're being posted. So I looked every day. We looked at the notice board, and the first posting I saw up there was the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry that I was going to be sent to. So I was standing by for that, and eventually they cancelled it. And then they put another one up, and it said the Heavy Royal Artillery Battery, somewhere. And so a major from the battery came to check on the people that had been selected for him. And as soon as he saw me, of course, very small and slight, he said, he's no good. So I was taken off that draft. And then finally, there was 70 people picked out to go to the 2nd Regiment Royal Horse Artillery, which had come from Dunkirk. Actually, it had come through Dover. And they'd lost about 100 men. So 70 of us were put on the draft. So we very quickly were shipped off to Northamptonshire, went to Rushden. And it's quite amusing, really, because everywhere around Dover, we had to carry a gas mask. And so when we marched, one hand was down the side and the other was swinging. And of course, we hadn't got any gas masks when we arrived at Rushden. The regimental sergeant major lined us up, and we were all marching with one hand down the side of us. And you can imagine, he was a Welsh merchant, so you imagine what he shouted. And eventually, we marched and got outside the territorial drill hall, and being selected, some were going to HI Battery and some to LN Battery. And they asked me what I was, and I said, we've got a vacancy for a clerk in the regimental office. So that's where I was brought, in the regimental office. And that's where I remained, actually, and worked my way up until I became chief, chief clerk. And so then, of course, we were training very hard, and the guns eventually arrived, and the equipment, and they got all the men. And we were doing training all over the place. And then suddenly, threat of the invasion came. So they took us out to a little place called Horseheath, waiting for the Germans to arrive. So, because of all our guns and everything, we all prepared. And of course, as you know, it didn't happen. And
what guns were these?
25-pounders. Towed 25-pounders.
Yeah.
And we had these two batteries at the time, which eventually grew to three, but they were made up of very famous horse artillery batteries, and they'd actually were in India with horses in 1938, and they came home for a rest. And of course, they formed these batteries into two regiments, into one regiment, so they were all famous batteries, well known, with VCs and all sorts of things. They fought at Waterloo and Battle of Fontarondon, or I think, marvellous history behind them. And so these were the two batteries. And then we came back from Haverhill, or Horseheath, a little village, back to Rushden, and then there was all sorts of speculation as to where we were going. And so we were preparing for overseas anyway. And in November, the regiment went to Liverpool, and they went on board the Dunedin, I think it was called, their ship. And I was on rear party, and there was just a small group of us, and eventually we followed them. And they arrived about a month before, I think it was about a month before us. And we stopped at Durban for a week, had a lovely week at Durban, before we went up to Port Said and arrived there 31st of December.
So you went in convoy and you went round the...
Yes, there were actually, we went on the Strathnava, a P&O liner, which was being used for the first time as a troop ship. So they were learning, I think, how to look after us. And we put in at Freetown for 2 days, with White Man's Grave, saying yes. We didn't go ashore or anything, and then went on again and sailed down to the South Atlantic and saw flying fish and whales and porpoises, and wonderful trip, really. Now and again, there was a bit of activity and depth charges being dropped, but eventually we got to Durban and stayed there for a week, and then on, as I say, up to Portshead. And we joined the regiment, who were famous to all those who served in Egypt. It was El Tarhag camp. It was a massive camp. And joined the regiment there in the middle of the night. And there we stayed until there was a lot of speculation as where we were going. We were really training for desert warfare, and we got sand channels put on the trucks, and we did all sorts of exercises out in the desert. There's plenty of room for everybody, and so we were standing by really to get the order to go into the desert. But suddenly they took us to a camp near Alexandria and said, well, and they issued us with jerkins and mosquito nets and all sorts of things, and so there was a lot of speculation as where we didn't think we were going into the desert, and then they said we were going on a cruiser somewhere, but then there was activity in the Med, and the Italians were moving their fleet out, and so every sort of battleship that was in the area had to assemble to go against them, and I think they had a very successful trip. But we then said, well, you know, what's going to happen to us? So they took us and put us on a little tiny ship. It was fortunately made in Liverpool or somewhere in the north, and called the Hellas, and being it had a Greek crew on, so of course we went to Greece. But we went through one of the worst storms I've ever known. I mean, in the Mediterranean, we didn't think we'd get really heavy storms, but this was a terrible storm, and even the crew thought the ship was going to sink. And everything that was loose on the deck was washed overboard. There were sort of latrines set up, and they were all washed overboard, and everything that was movable. And we just stood and held on the deck, really. And we had about 24 hours of that, tossing about. We lost the convoy. There was two or three destroyers had come with us, and we lost the convoy, and we really didn't think we were going to reach port again. It was that bad. It was so bad. And I know I was standing near the regimental sergeant major, and I said, I've lost my life jacket. He said, that wouldn't be any good to you in that sea. And But eventually it settled down and we weren't attacked, and we got to Piraeus, the port of Athens, and was taken to a camp which we should have occupied, but it had all been blown down in the night with the storm. So we had to put that up, and it was a rocky ground, so it was a bit difficult. We only stayed in Athens or nearby for a short while, and eventually we set off for the north of Greece, and it took us several days and over terrible roads, mountainous roads, and it really was very dangerous. And eventually we got to this little village called Sevastiano, not far from Salonika, actually, and there we were going to await the arrival of the Germans, who they thought were going to attack Greece. Because the Greeks were fighting the Italians way in the south, Albania way. We weren't really mixed up with them. And, of course, eventually the Germans did attack. And I know the second in command was an Irishman, Major Tom Kavanagh. He'd been on a recce with the intelligence officer. And he came back into RHQ and he said, "We'd better get out of here," he said, "otherwise we'd be shot up the bum like a common thrush." So we sort of moved over through a pass. It was very difficult to get through, and to cover another area where they were breaking through. And we did actually, our batteries were firing over open sites at the enemy, and they did knock out quite a lot of troops. But of course, eventually we had to give way because it was our air force, which would actually, they had quite a few planes in the airfields of Greece, but they were all shut up on the ground on the first day. Mm. So we had nothing in the air at all. And so the whole sort of retreat back to the evacuation, there was no RAF planes at all. And it was very difficult to travel by day because you were just, these mountain roads are being shot up all over the place. Yeah. And we had a number of attacks, and we did lose quite a few people. And I had an office truck, which I'd left in with the B echelon. And I'd gone with the adjutant. I was always with him, really, at sort of what we called fighting headquarters. And then we suddenly had a message to say that there'd been an air attack on our B echelon, knocked out a number of trucks, and a direct hit on the office truck. So everything of mine and all the records all went up in that bomb. And so we fought our way back, and it was extremely difficult because Italians were there, the Greeks were then coming back from Italy, where they'd been, and they were clogging up the roads, and they were very narrow, and they were mountainous. And every so often, we came to an impassable road because of Greek vehicles that were stuck or something. So we just pushed them over the edge and sort of went by. We had a lot of problems with air and going back. And of course, eventually, we had to get rid of a lot of troops because we got no transport for them, and transport had been knocked out. So they were sent back, and none of them were seen again. They were either, made prisoner of war, most of them, I think, but they disappeared. Then one battery went back, and they were taken to Crete.
Yes.
And we lost a lot of battery people there, and officers. But we eventually made our way back all the guns were spiked. They put a shell down the front and fired a shell at it, and it exploded and became a banana, peeled like a banana. And so we were hiding up in a olive orchard, and then eventually they said, right, you're going to be being evacuated, so come and line up on the beach, but you'll stand there, it was dark this time, so you'll stand there, and you will not go to the left or right if a boat comes in, because flat bottom boats will be coming in, but you'll go to the one that comes in where you are. And they'd given me actually a box of anti-tank ammunition to carry with me. They said, oh yeah, take that back then. And anyway, eventually this flat bottom boat came in. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I marched over with this box of ammunition, and the Navy chap on there said, you're not taking that, he said, human beings only. So we got on board, and we went out, and I think a couple of miles or so, and eventually we came in the dark against this, it was a merchant cruiser, Glengyle, and apparently they'd come in with a sister ship, and the sister ship had had a bomb down the funnel, and it was sunk. Anyway, we climbed up rope ladders, and I was directed by one of the naval chaps into a gun turret, and he said, curl up on the floor there, I said, you'll be all right, and he threw down a Jaeger wool sleeping bag, he said, that'll keep you warm, and I kept that for actually 2 or 3 years afterwards. But anyway, we then dawn broke, we were sailing away then, we got loaded up, dawn broke, and soon the aircraft were above us in the air, and one dive bomber came down, straight down towards us, and the bomb landed actually off the forepeak, and it was damaged the front of the ship. And just in front of me, there was one poor little chap, he was in HR battery, and he was shot in the back. And another one was wounded in the hand, but the one who was shot in the back died in front of me more or less. He was only a couple of yards. And then we sailed on, and it was said that we were probably going to Crete, but of course we were damaged. So eventually we limped into Alexandria, and there we are back where we came from.
Yeah.
So that was the Greek campaign. Of course, then we lost everything. They asked the second in command, this Major Kavanagh, where the Imprest account was. He said, don't talk to me about Imprest. I don't know what happened to it, but we'd lost the Imprest account. So there was a lot of questions asked from the paymaster. But anyway, then, of course, we got nothing. We had to completely re-equip, and this time was for the desert.
You'd lost a lot of men as well.
Yes, about 100, I suppose, altogether, yes, which is, yeah. But, so we had to find more men and re-equip for our desert warfare, and so, because we went into the desert, and eventually, and went, the battles went on for a couple of years like a pendulum.
Yes.
And we'd go up, and then we'd be knocked back, and when we were in Greece, of course, the Rommel had arrived with the Africa Corps,
yeah,
which was a different cup of tea to the Italians, who didn't really have a heart in the war at all. They didn't really want to fight. But so we stayed there. I went actually once for a whole year without seeing any green grass, no females at all, no buildings. We were in the desert. We didn't even see the sea. And a whole year, and because it was pretty drab, and quite often some of the water was desalinated rather than fresh water, until perhaps we found one of these water holes, I think made by the Romans, and we got water up from that, which of course was cold and really nice, unless they'd of course been contaminated by the Germans. They put poison down them and oil and things. If they retreated, as they retreated, they,
yes.
And so of course we couldn't use that water. If we did find one of these wells, they were few and far between. But but some of the adventures and the battles were so hairy. That, I mean, we attacked Rommel, and we were holding Tobruk. In one of the battles, they held Tobruk and stayed there. And so the plan of action was for three divisions to come up from the south and one to press from the front. And we'd actually got, we thought, Rommel bottled up, and we more or less surrounded them, and we were advancing from the south, and the other corps was advancing from the front. And we were what we call leaguering, or lagering, as they came from their boar, I think, boars, go into a lager at night. As soon as dusk came, we just moved in close and stayed like that until first light, and then opened up again. We had to have about 200 yards between each vehicle. So we were waiting to do this because our guns were in action, and we could actually see the shells landing, and Germans seemed to be in quite a mess. And we had, I think it was a huge, we call it an ACV, armoured control vehicle, with a little red light on the top where the battery, he was brigade commander, would be. And it was quite close to us, and we were looking back, waiting for our guns to stop firing and pull back to go into this close lager. And we looked behind, and we saw a lot of tanks coming behind us, and so we thought that was the reserve tanks. We didn't really know who they were. And suddenly somebody said, "You notice they've got white crosses on them?" Because it was Germans. And they started firing, and trucks were going up left and right, all sort of bursting into flames. So we had an 808 Morris, and so we sort of jumped the ball and just went like hell. And we were going through tents that were put up there. There were, I think, were Italians, and driving through them hell for leather. And we went for quite a few miles, and it was dark, and we suddenly discovered we'd just got one gun, we got one truck with a radio in it, and there were 11 vehicles altogether. And suddenly somebody said there was a green Veery light went up and thought it was one of ours. And so they took a bearing on it. There was some signals with us. And he got in touch with somebody who said that they were trying to reform, because everybody was all over the place. It was absolute bedlam. And he got a map reference and a compass bearing. And we were to make for this because that's where the ACV was and was trying to reform somebody, anyway, trying to get together. And so we were driving slowly towards this. And then somebody apparently had seen a tank and had stopped. And suddenly somebody shouted, I think it was a German voice shouted. And so we realised we were going towards the enemy. So we did an about turn and went off and was firing as we went. And it took, I think it took about a fortnight for the whole sort of brigade to get together again. It was absolute bedlam. And, you couldn't really understand what was going on half the time. And it was when Montgomery took over that he told us what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. So he really sort of got the thing together again. So we knew, you know, what was expected of us and where we were going. But